Okay, it looks like we have Fiza on the line. Are you there, Fiza? Okay. Let me see. There we go. Fiza, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, and your son is also.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Is both of our voices?
I go as DJ Shatter.
Excuse me?
DJ Shatter. Like a window would shatter. Or lies sometimes shatter.
Can you hear us clear or no?
I can hear you really good, and I definitely heard Fiza too. You guys are coming to Santa Cruz tonight for a benefit, I believe, at Loudon Nelson Center.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure about my schedule. What about you, Mom?
Today?
Yeah.
We are going in the evening to Santa Cruz. We have the vigil. Meeting and. Do you want to read it? Yeah, just a moment.
Yeah, we are coming to Santa Cruz, but we're not sure where because.
Right, hang on a moment.
Usually they, the Global Exchange take us to
there. Yeah.
So on the phone, we've got Fiza Al Araji. Did I say that right?
Yes.
And what was your name, the son?
Raed Jarrar.
Raed. Nice to meet you. I'm just wondering if you guys want to, you know, maybe share with us a little bit about what you're doing. You're running blogs, and I haven't really been able to see them because I'm not very computer literate. In fact, I'm not really sure what a blog is. So maybe you could explain that and say what you're doing with your blogs.
A blog is it's a short for web blog. It's a regular diary, but you write it on the computer. So it's a regular website where you write your diaries. It's a very simple idea. Usually it's a free hosted website that people can have access to and leave their thoughts there. So some of the weblogs start having more specific issues to, or concerns, like our blogs are more political or socio-political. We discuss issues about Iraq and the Middle East or issues that relate to the occupation and the war or the Western-Eastern relationships and such issues. Other people just stick to their daily events or maybe like some random thoughts on the blogs. So I think the phenomenon started just some few years ago, but now it's very well spread and it's reaching to the mainstream as well. So now you can find even the mainstream media is having their quote-unquote blogs. And even the TV is adopting the phenomena as well, because now the TV shows are having their blogs as well, and actors and actresses have their blogs that they keep in contact with their fans. So now I think it's like losing its individual or like one-to-one meaning, and it's getting like more corporate meaning as well.
So I'm wondering what you think might be the most vital information that people in the U.S. need to hear about what's going on in Iraq.
Right.
There are so many different sources of media, but for sure, like hearing from blogs or the individual stories that are coming from Iraq is one of these sources. I mean, I will tell my mom, maybe, I will let my mom cover this, the rest of the question. Maybe she has more ideas about the U.S. coverage of, the U.S. mainstream coverage of the events in Iraq.
Yeah. Well, first, I want to talk about the idea of blogging. It is something like your personal journal. So you have to talk about your opinion, about your vision in the life, about your daily life, and a kind of diaries. So we I started to write my diaries during the beginning of the war on Iraq. And Raed, my son, he helped me. He established the blog for me in the end of 2003. We put all the diaries on that. And since that time, I continue to writing the blogging. If you go to read the bloggers, you can understand their daily life, their their attitude from everything. So you can, as you are living with them, like, as you are sharing their experience in the life, and you can understand, especially in this bad situation in Iraq, you can understand what is the meaning of the life in Iraq under this hard days. So this is the benefit of blogging, like making, building bridges and ties between people to understand what is the situation, because the media is not telling all the details of the life in Iraq, and they are not telling the truth about what is going on in Iraq. So that's why we believe that the blogging is a very important operation in this time, especially in the war zone or in Iraq during the invasion and after the invasion. And also, when I came here since 1 month till now, I can understand what is the lack of information between the American people. They don't know the reality about our culture, our civilization, our life. They have from the media the bad image about women in the Muslim community or in Iraq or in the Middle East. And I told them that women in our culture, they have the right to study, to work, to vote, to drive a car, to choose the husband. Like you, we have all the rights. But the media didn't tell you. They told you that the women in Islam and in the Middle East, they are oppressed, and their husbands treated them like animals. And this is very wrong. This is it is funny for me when I can hear this story. I asked them, look for me. When I came, look at me. When we came with my colleague with the delegation here to this country since 1 month, we have been invited by a global exchange, and we were four. One is a pharmacist, the other one is also a pharmacist, and I am engineer, and the other one, she was working like a journalist. So this is a sample of Iraqi women. If you have the chance to go to Iraq, to meet Iraqi women, you can find thousands of Iraqi women who are well-educated, who are managers, and they are businesswomen. They have their own work or own company. You can't believe it, because the media didn't tell you the truth. The truth is, if you have the chance to go to the Middle East, you can meet wonderful women. They are well educated. They have a kind of freedom in the speech and of teaching, of working, of traveling, of everything. Even if we have put a hijab or a cover on our head, it doesn't mean we are backward people or we are not educated people. So that I believe that this visit for me, it opened my eyes. And I can talk with the people about different issues. It is not only about Iraq and the war in Iraq. It is also about building ties between different cultures and building a bridge between cultures to make a kind of understanding between people. This is the main goal of this visit.
Hi, Faiza. My name is Anne, and I'm the one that's going to be bringing you tonight to the Loudon Nelson Center.
Okay.
Hi. I'm so excited and so glad that you're speaking about the image of women.
Yes.
Because I believe that you are absolutely correct that there is enormous amount of misinformation. And
yeah.
I would like you to talk about the impact, especially yes. on women, of the war since the war started, because it seems that women's rights have certainly slid and
yeah.
are doing much worse.
Yeah.
If you could speak about that.
Yeah, I speak about that everywhere. And yesterday I was in the university in Sacramento, and we talked with the students, and I have talked with the faculty. The professors, they came to sit during the lunchtime, and I told them about the situation of Iraq women. And there is a group of women from the professor. They were laughing. They said, we didn't imagine, we have never imagined this is the reality in your life. I told them that during the Iranian war, the men in Iraq were busy in the war, and the women controlled the life of Iraq. They controlled the economy of Iraq. They were playing the role of the mother and the father in the house, and the role of the man outside the house. They managed everything, and they got the confidence in themselves. This is the positive thing, and this is the positive side in our life. But they didn't tell you that. And they didn't tell you that the education in Iraq is for free. So all the women and men can go for free to continue their studies, even the PhD. They didn't tell you the positive side in our culture and in our life.
That's so different than it is here in the United States, and it's important, I think, for all of us to understand that it is often a class issue here in the United States for who can afford an education, and to think that that kind of freedom and access to information and to furthering one's own ability to learn and know things is just an extraordinary right that we don't have that freedom here in the United States.
It's also
I
was just going to say it's also a bit of a threat to the state when we're educated and we can see when there's something wrong. We can have dialogue about that and try to change it. And if they want to be able to oppress people, then they definitely don't want them to get an education and start to realize that they're, you know, oppressing. I'm also wondering about the cost of war to the children. I have two daughters, and I feel very lucky because I know that my children have, you know, it's a shaky future because of what's happening to the environment from, you know, the bombs that Bush is having the military drop to, people just over-consuming in our in this country, in America. But I also kind of wonder about what was going on, the you know, pre-war, like the sanctions, like what kind of impact did the sanctions have on children? Like children don't deserve to suffer. And as far as I understood, there were like, you know, hundreds and thousands of children dying from starvation because of U.S. sanctions. And that's one of the things that I feel like kind of gets overlooked when people start talking about the war, is that the war is really, I mean, it's become an aggressive, you know, way to kill instead of a more passive way of just letting them starve to death. We're dropping bombs, but really this has been a war against Iraq for a long, long time.
Yeah,
this is a war that started in way before this war. It started from the early 90s. And the sanctions, the period where the sanctions were imposed on Iraq even included many military campaigns where Iraq was bombed and people were killed because of bombs as well. But even at that time, under the sanctions, when the U.S. administration at that time was asked about the big price that the Iraqi people were paying for the sanctions, and how hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of children were dying because of the sanctions, the cold answer came at that time that it's worth it, or that, you know, like it's worth it for the Iraqi people to pay this price to get rid of Saddam Hussein. And I think that this speech is still continuing until now, that it is worth it for the Iraqi people to lose hundreds of thousands of people and destroy their country for the so-called freedom, who was like the freedom that was imported by the Bush administration and the tanks to Iraq. So I, like, you are right. This war did not start 3 years ago. It started 16 years ago, and it's continuing on in the same pace, under the same strategies, and the same mentality and terminology.
Yeah, I want to continue that. And during the sanction, the people suffered from the lack of food, lack of medicine for their kids. And now the, you can see they contaminated the water and the soil in Iraq by the depleted uranium. And now there is increasing of the cases of cancer between the kids. This is horrible phenomena in Iraq. And under the lack of medicine, you can imagine the life of Iraqi family. They, who they have a member, like a kid who has cancer, and they have no money, they have no medicine to treat him. You can see this is the cases in Iraq, and they will never tell you about this in the media.
Yeah, the depleted uranium is a big case that is not being covered by the mainstream media, despite all of the attempts of putting this in front of their eyes, because depleted uranium bullets were used intensively, especially during this war. They were even used in the 1991 war. And they caused an increasing ratio of cancers in the places where they were used, in Basra, in the south. But in this war, it was used even in the... I went personally and took a Geiger counter and went to Iraqi neighborhoods to see the tanks that were hit between the houses, between the residential houses, and the tanks that were pulled and put in a big graveyard for tanks near Baghdad. And I took the Geiger counter and I saw the radiation levels there, and it was some hundreds of times more than the regular one. And the CPA authorities, the occupation authorities, were giving the Iraqis papers telling them it's fine to cut these tanks to small parts and go melt them and reuse them for other purposes. So I went there a couple of times. One of them was with a mainstream media journalist, and I put myself in danger, and I put my hands inside the tanks, and I went very close to them just to show how high the radiation is, and to show how other Iraqis were sitting inside the tanks and cutting them to go and sell them because they don't have money. And the news were not covered at all. It didn't reach to the news because I think it's politically incorrect for the mainstream media to put these things and, you know, like accuse the U.S. Government of using the so-called weapons of mass destruction against civilians where they were supposed to go and, you know, help the world get rid of them. So it's a very big disaster that is happening in Iraq until now because many of these bullets reached to the underground water in Iraq, and no one is dealing with this. No one is collecting the bullets, and this will have a contamination that will continue for millions of years, not some thousands, millions of years.
And this really speaks to the weapons of mass destruction that the United States is using, the breaches of the Geneva Conventions, and so many human rights abuses that are going on right now that so many Americans and those here in the United States have no idea and continue to be wondering if Iraq is harboring weapons of mass destruction, which is seems to be quite a shadow image idea. But I just want to let our listeners know that we are speaking with Faiza Al-Haraji and her son, Raed Jarar, who will be speaking tonight at the Loudoun Nelson Center at 7 p.m. And I wanted you to, you know, both continue about what you're talking about, or Martha also had DJ Shatter had an idea.
I don't know who that is. I'm DJ Shatter. Yeah, I guess I just wanted to let you also know that this month here in the States, and actually it probably should just be worldwide, is Child Abuse Awareness Month. And I just feel like George Bush and his father both are some of the most abusive people in the world to children. And, you know, the only thing it seems like Bush is liberating is the oil. On the other hand, he's also leaking classified information, and then there's all these conventions he's breaking, and he's claiming that there's weapons of mass destruction, which I don't, you know, maybe, I mean, I just don't know what to think of all of these things. Bush seems so much more evil than Saddam Hussein to me.
Yeah.
So I just, yeah, I guess, what do you think of all those?
I mean, I don't know whether there is a balance for... you know, a scale for being evil and who's more evil than the other. But for sure, both of them, both Bush and Saddam, have taken big authoritarian and individual decisions that affected the lives of millions of people, whether from their own people or from other nationalities. Like when Saddam Hussein decided to attack Kuwait in 1990 because of an individual belief, and he put all of his country and all of the neighbors in that big ordeal that everyone is paying for it until now. And I think there are similarities, some similarities between their personalities or between their political missions. But, you know, still there's a big difference between what happens in the U.S. under the system here and how people actually go and vote for their president and what happens in Iraq, where no one can go and no one voted for Saddam Hussein or no one re-elected Saddam Hussein after he invaded Kuwait. So,
you know,
there are some similarities in the situation, but there are some other, you know, very big differences where here in the U.S., people have more authority to change their government and, like, you know, to work harder for changing their foreign policy, where in other countries in the world, people don't have, unfortunately, they don't have this privilege.
You know, I honestly don't think Bush won last time, though. I think it was, you know, a fixed election, and I'm really disturbed by the way that the Supreme Court, which is elected by the president, just kind of let it slide, you know? I don't feel like we got a fair vote at all in this country. I feel like it's an illusion. And I feel like their illusion of saying that they're trying to liberate people is another, it's like, you know, just a bunch of lies to me. They're hurting people and they don't seem to care. And the only thing that they want is the oil and they don't care about the lives of the people. And I just think the lives of all people are very important.
Yeah, they don't care about their life. And I want to talk about the children in Iraq. It is not only the children who are sick or they are poor or they have cancer or others. We want to talk about the children who lost their fathers, because now there is an army of orphans in Iraq and widows. And if you go to have a chance to talk with the small children in Iraq, the kids, to ask them what they think about America, they will tell you that they hate America because the American soldiers killed their fathers or put them in a prison. So it means, what is the vision in the mind of these kids in the future? This is the new generation. This is the people who will be in the future building Iraq. And you know, like somebody planted the wrong idea about America in the mind of these kids because of the bad action of the occupation and this administration. The American people have to pay the price of the fault of their government in Iraq.
I think that it's really important that we recognize that it is our government that's doing this and hold them accountable, because, you know, for any child to know hate is not a right thing. And it's not that they hate because of something, anything other than their experience, what they've actually lived through. And, they're hungry and their parents are dead. And, you know, it seems like Americans don't really care. They want to hop in their SUV and drive around and not really even, care that the president stole the election. It's just amazing to me.
Most of the Americans that I meet, especially here in California or in the, activists world, they care. They care a lot. And they're trying to do their best to change what's happening outside. And there are many people from the other side. There are many Iraqis, like me and my mother, my family, my friends. Many of us realize that there is a big gap between the U.S. Foreign policy and the U.S. domestic policy. And we can distinguish between, see the difference between these two things. But you can't really, expect a child who lost his dad or, someone who lost a part of his family or something to be that articulate or sensitive in distinguishing between foreign policy and domestic policy and all of these small details, for someone who's 10,000 miles away from here. So the disaster is that at the end of the road, what this administration did on the foreign policy is representative of the U.S. people. And this is the unfortunate fact that even people like me try to fight against on that side, not on this side, because there is a big confusion that happened on both sides. And one of the big confusions that happens from the Iraqi side or the Middle Eastern side, that all of the American people maybe are supporting this war or something. And it's like a very sad, unfortunate thing that is happening because of the war. So it's a part of our mission as people who are trying to link the two different cultures or the two different countries to try to reach to more clear vision about what Iraqis are doing and what Iraqis are and what Americans are doing and who Americans are as well, because there is a confusion from both parties in the meantime.
I wanted to let listeners know about the blog that you both do. There's Riyadh in the Middle and Family in Baghdad Blogspot. Is that, did I get
yes.
that right?
Yes.
Those are both the two blogs, and you could certainly Google both Faiza Al-Haraji's name or Raed Gerard, R-A-E-D, J-A, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
J-A-R-R-A-R. And also Faiza, F-A-I-Z-A-A-L, J-A-I-R-A. Anyway, we are speaking with Faiza Al-Haraji and Raed Gerard, who will be tonight at the Loudoun Nelson Center. Your voice is so extraordinary for us, and it's so rare for us to be able to actually hear from people who have had the experience that you have. And so I think this is such a wonderful opportunity. I'm so grateful that you're able to have extended your visa to be able to make this event tonight.
Thank you.
And I wanted to know, you have been here in the United States for a while. I wondered if you could talk about your impression of people here in the United States.
Well, I have been here since more than 1 month, and we meet the people in New York and Washington and Los Angeles and San Francisco and many different cities. And, you know, most of the meeting was with people in church and university and the small community. And I was surprised because the majority I have seen, they were against the war, and they were till now against the existence of the occupation in Iraq, and they are asking to pull out the troops from Iraq. So I discovered that there is a big gap between the people in this country and between the decision maker who are in the Congress or in the White House. And when we went to meet the people in Congress, we saw another kind of people. They have their own decision and they have their own opinion, and they don't like to listen. They don't want to listen. Even if there is Iraqi delegation in front of them, if we are independent women coming from Iraq as trying to tell them what is the reality, what is the suffering of our families, they don't want to listen. They put the decision in their mind. So it was like depressing thing for Iraqis. It was a kind, we felt sad because when we came here, we know that the American people, they are good and nice and peaceful, but we understand the decision is not in the hand of the American people. It is in the hand of the administration. And when you have chance to meet the people in that zone, in the administration or the Congress, they don't want to listen. They put their decisions and they put their opinion and close everything in their minds. So this is bad. We, you know, but we have to continue. We can't... We can't stop acting and working and talking to make the change on the ground. And we hope the change is coming. We can feel it. There is a very big sign that the change is coming because we can feel that this administration, they are embarrassed. Now they are in a crisis. They have to explain what is going on in Iraq and what is the justification for their staying in Iraq. And the people in this country, they stop believing in them. So they have really to act in another kind of policy. They have to change their policy in a way or in another.
I know that when Scott Ritter was speaking to our audience the day that you weren't able to make it, that it was very clear that he was holding the U.S. people accountable, because it is, even though people might say that they are against the war and they are against the occupation, there's extraordinary apathy, there's extraordinary silence that I think is complicit with the administration's actions. And, you know, we always are trying to, I'm an activist, I try to get people to speak out more often. We're having a vigil today, for example, at our town clock at 5 p.m., and we've invited the whole community to come down. There's going to be Code Pink, and there will be Women in Black, and there's the Middle East study group that will join us, and Buddhists Against the War, and you know, the whole Peace Coalition's Santa Cruz Peace Coalition. So it's hopefully a big event, and yet, you know, we feel often really impotent to know what to do.
Yeah, I don't really. I almost feel like protesting isn't enough, and I hope I say your name right, Raed. Was saying, you know, that we have all this power to take the government and change the government, but I really don't believe we do have that power. And I feel like, what are we going to do? Is it time to like really get up and kick some ass? Or is it time to, you know, to start writing letters and telling people to write letters? Is it time to start trying to get propositions on the ballot? I mean, I feel like helpless in a way.
I mean, because I spent most of my life, or like, you know, the majority of my life living between countries in the Middle East, when I moved to the U.S., now I live in the U.S., I'm a U.S. resident and taxpayer, and I feel shocked every time someone feels that he's powerless in the U.S., because comparing to the situation that I used to live most of my life in Iraq or Jordan or Saudi Arabia, we don't have any way of expressing our political needs there. You don't have any hope in going and asking your government to change their policy. So the government has its own policies, and they have their universe, and the people have their other universe. And this is the case all around the Middle East. Go see what happens in Egypt or in Jordan or in Iraq before the war, or in Saudi Arabia, or in so many other countries. So when I moved to the U.S., no, there is a lot to be done. There is a very, very much things that can be done inside the U.S. That can actually change the U.S. foreign and domestic policy with democratic ways, without reaching to violence, without, you know, kicking us, as you say. You know, there are so many ways that start from writing letters to your House representatives and maybe changing the vote in the next presidential or congressional elections. And this includes going in protests and starting community-based projects for supporting our ideas and starting public awareness campaigns and talking to people more and letting people know that they have the power to change. Because this is one of the biggest problems that I think is affecting the U.S. domestic and foreign policy, that people don't believe in themselves here. They have so much power, they have so much space, and they can go and vote and change everything in a peaceful way. But people don't believe that they have all of this power, and they should start using this power that they have. It. They should write more letters to their representatives and ask their representatives to do specific things like stop building permanent bases in Iraq, or ask them to start putting a schedule for pulling out the troops from Iraq, or some other very important points that should be done from inside the government. And so many people are doing these things, and so many other people are doing other community-based projects for supporting the U.S. people and telling them that it's your responsibility as a U.S. resident or citizen here or a taxpayer. It's your responsibility to go and ask this government in the legal ways, ask the government to change its policy, because it's your individual responsibility to go do this thing. So, like, there is a lot to be done in awareness and a lot of confidence that should be given to the people to know that they have the power for changing the policy within the system. It's very easy here, and it's such a shame that, like, such a country with such a system where you can actually reach to the ballot and put your vote there, and you can't believe of the power of people, where in other countries in the Middle East, where if you went in a small demonstration, you would, like, your own government will shoot you or kill you or you will disappear. And still people there go and work and try to change their governmental policies and, you know, have political work. So, I mean, let me disagree with you about this particular point, and because I believe a lot in the power of people in the U.S., and I believe a lot that if we all work together and believed in that we are the majority and that we want to the troops to pull out, there is 63% in the last CNN poll, 63% of the U.S. population that are asking the U.S. troops to pull out. So if we can put these 63% people together to write letters and ask the government to pull out, the government will pull out.
Yes, and also I want the American people to make a kind of pressure on the mainstream media to ask them to tell the truth, because they are partner of this administration of covering the real story in Iraq and the horrible action of the occupation in Iraq. So you have to make a kind of pressure on the mainstream media, on the TV, on the newspaper, ask them to tell the truth.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I really want to tell you both that I think your enthusiasm is very contagious, and to also let you know that Santa Cruz was the first city in the United States that demanded for the troops to be pulled out of Iraq, and we made a lot of headlines with that action. And it's true that there are ways that we can do things, and it's very important for us to be reminded of other countries where those kinds of actions will have you be murdered or, you know, disappeared in some way. And I really appreciate having that perspective, because often we don't understand and know how to use the freedoms that we do have. I wondered if you could, again, I just want to let listeners know that we are speaking with Faiza Al-Haraji and Raed Jarar, who will be at the Loud Nelson tonight at 7 p.m. And I wanted just to have you speak a little about Bush's today in the news. It's been found that Bush was responsible for leaking classified information, and in other times, like the CIA operative, but that this kind of action in the past has brought down presidents, that they've been impeached for this kind of thing, with Nixon, and in particular I was thinking of Nixon.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how already the spin in the media is trying to say that somehow Bush has the authority to declassify information and therefore it's all okay.
Yeah.
So I think even more so it's going to be up to people and actions for people to say, no, you don't have that power.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just about having the power for declassifying or intimidating some anti-war people in this very immoral way. It's about taking the entire country to this unjustified war and lying to everyone from the international community and lying to the Iraqi and American people as well, and coming after 2 years and saying, it was a mistake. I mean, I've never heard this thing in my life. When Bill Clinton lied about having sex in the White House, like the U.S. government was more affected than what happened with George Bush. I mean, just like on the last 10 years scale, you know. So it's really like shocking to see George Bush coming like some months ago and saying that there were no weapons of mass destruction and that some mistakes have been done in Iraq, but changing Saddam Hussein's regime was a must. So I mean, if we agree with the administration that they have lied to us and like to us as Iraqis and Americans and like everyone in the world, and that mistakes have been done in Iraq, there are so many ways in fixing these mistakes. It's not just a 5-minute speech on the TV that comes with like, oh, sorry. This is not the way of solving the problem. This is not the way of admitting mistakes or fixing them. There are other channels for dealing with these problems, and they have precedents. They are under the international law and even under the U.S. law. So there is much that should be said about what happened during this administration time, considering Iraq or considering other domestic issues, that if it happened during any other president before like 10 or 20 or 30 years in the U.S., the president would have been impeached long time ago. But in the Bush situation, we are not facing any big reactions. And it's very unfortunate because the mistakes that this administration have done already are more than enough to change it, or like at least ask for the impeachment for this president.
Yeah, well, I've had a bumper sticker on my car saying impeach Bush since the second election, and so and have been pushing for it since the first election. So I want to have you maybe mention a little bit about your film. I know that you're tight on time today, and I don't want to keep you from other important events that you need to do today. But if people could know a little bit about the short film that you're going to be showing tonight.
We have a film. It was done by a filmmaker. He is half Iraqi, half Swedish, and he was in Iraq in the beginning of the war and the beginning of the occupation. And he went with the occupation force to Samarra. It was in 2003, and they entered to arrest the men from the houses. And you can see the way like how they insult the Iraqi people, and the actions were very aggressive, and they put them outside in the cold weather and for 4 hours without drinking, without eating. And they were, it is like just a kind of routine action, like to arrest people like randomly and put them outside in the cold condition. And some of them, and they put the ties on their hands and the bag on their head. It was in the beginning of the occupation. And you can imagine this action, how the reaction in the heart of Iraqi people. They pushed Iraqi people to be angry and to put the hatred in their hearts because of this bad action. And they put the moderate Iraqi people to be extremists. And they pushed the people who are innocent and they are peaceful to be working with the resistance against them because of these bad and ugly actions on the ground.
I wanted to find out if you had any summary things that you'd like to speak about or anything that you'd like to add to this conversation today, either of you.
Yeah, in fact, I have maybe a last point to add to the conversation, and there is a lot to be said about Iraq, but maybe we'll speak elaborate on more points today in the meeting at 7 p.m. in Santa Cruz. But my last point is that there is the image about what's happening in Iraq now is kind of clear, because even the mainstream media is not saying that the situation is good anymore, and like everyone realized that the war was a mistake and is a mistake, and the occupation is not functioning the right way, and there are so many disasters are happening there. So I think that now one of the more important things that just saying how the situation is, the more important point is to say what's the answer for the current crisis, to try to suggest solutions for the current situation in Iraq. And maybe this is one of the most important things that I will be talking about tonight, is an exit plan from Iraq, and what's my suggestion for how can we pull the U.S. troops from Iraq without cutting and running from Iraq, and how can we deal with the Iraq situation now, and how can we fix the mistakes that were already been done in the last 3 years. So I think this is a very important topic that we should start handling from now.
Yeah, and I think that if they admit really that there is mistakes in Iraq, it is not enough to say it was a mistake. You know what is the meaning of mistakes? It means we lost hundreds of thousands of Iraqi people under these mistakes, and we lost our cities, and we lost billions of dollars from our money. This is the mistakes they have done to Iraq and Iraqis, so they have to pay compensation for Iraqi people about what they have done. And if they saying to you that we want to fix what we have, we want let Iraqis fix what they destroyed in Iraq, but they have to pay compensation for Iraqis to fix by their hands and to rebuild their country by the hands of Iraqi people.
Compensation is one of the very effective tools in dealing with such a situation like the situation that is happening in Iraq now. And it won't be the first time that an invading country will be paying compensation for the big mistakes that it did. Let's see, in the case of Iraq itself, when Iraq attacked Kuwait in 1990, the United Nations established a small committee called the UNCC, the United Nations Compensation Committee, and they decided that Iraq should pay compensation to Kuwait, and the compensation were around $52 billion. And I think Iraq already paid around $20 or $22 billion of those. And it's still paying, until this day, 5% of its oil revenue for the mistake that Iraq have done in Iraq, in Kuwait. And then the Iraqi government apologized publicly for the mistakes, quote-unquote, that were done in Kuwait. So, like, even when you go to the most authoritarian dictatorship political regimes in the region, you see that the way that they were dealing with their big disaster of occupying Kuwait was more legitimate and more under the international law than the Bush administration. So, I mean, I can't believe the Bush administration should feel like so ashamed that they are even making the image of people like Saddam Hussein look very, you know, moral comparing to them, because Saddam Hussein is looking he looks like the legitimate and under the international law more than the Bush administration in dealing with the occupation. So there are so many ways in fixing the mistakes that are happened in Iraq in the 3 years, and you know, just like a 5 minute speech by George Bush saying, yeah, it was a mistake, is not enough, neither for the American people and nor for the Iraqi people. This will not fix the problems, and this will not stop the bloodshed that is going on in Iraq.
And I just also, I mean, what I've been reading too is that, you know, we send, the taxpayers in the United States send over, for example, $10 billion that was supposedly targeting reconstruction, and they lost the money. And they tell us that they just lost the money somehow.
And these kinds of things, again, that people are
able to just swallow that kind of information and think, oh, it's lost. Okay,
yeah,
now what do we do?
Yeah, I mean,
it's extraordinary.
The U.S. taxpayers didn't lose just $10 billion. The U.S. taxpayers are losing between $1 and $2 trillion in Iraq.
Exactly.
$1 and $2 billion. I mean, can you imagine the number? There was a lot of money that is being spent in Iraq. In fact, what the U.S. Army is spending in Iraq on military operations alone every month is around $8 billion. There are $8 billion that are being wasted for, like, killing people and destroying country and doing nothing in Iraq.
And building bases.
Every month. So this situation is, like, you know, it's this expensive. And on the other hand, the untold news in 2006 that the administration stopped all of the funds for reconstruction in 2006, beginning from last month, officially, and decided to shift all of the funds that were supposed to be spent on the reconstruction effort to security, to private security companies instead. And this is, like, the untold news in the mainstream media, because until now you go and you read that, like, there is the quote-unquote reconstruction campaign in Iraq is still going on. But officially it was stopped by a decision by this administration. They said that we will not spend another dollar of the American taxpayers on the reconstruction because of some fake reasons. And, like, you know, now they stopped. So even the fake reconstruction campaign that was not even doing anything in the last 3 years stopped this year, and now we are just spending the money just on the military operations and building permanent bases there.
I want to thank you both so much for being on the show today, and I think our community is really blessed to have you come and speak to us directly tonight at 7 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson, and I am so looking forward to meeting you both, and can't wait to see you tonight.
So
thank you so much.
Thank you very much for hosting us.
Thank you so much for being on Free Radio.
I also wanted to thank you and remind people that they can actually read basically your diary at blogspot.com, and one of them is A Family in Baghdad.
Yeah.
And the other one is Raid in the Middle.
Yes.
And those are both at blogspot.com. And I am actually, I think I'm going to do a little reading from it. I went to it and found something that, what that Americans usually ask at the end of each meeting, what can we do to help Iraqis?
Yeah.
So I'm going to read that today.
Every day.
Thank you. Every day, yes.
We have this question.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. I was, I just like to reiterate some of the points that Faiza was making about the image of women that we get of Muslim women, and that we have a very bad image of the women from Iraq, that they, that most of them are like animals, and they're treated like animals by their husbands and, you know, by the men in the countries. But the reality that she puts forward is that in Iraq they have free education that includes a PhD, if an individual wants to get that, and it's open to both men and women, and that women are able to study, work, they can drive cars, you know, they can they hold jobs and kinds of things, and that these rights have been eroded since our invasion, and that our invasion has had an enormous impact on the rights of women and made it much worse and much more rife with fundamentalist points of view that are making it harder for women. So I thought that was really interesting that she brought that up.
I think it would also be interesting to see what her take is on which people are actually, you know, doing the violence against Iraqi women, because I believe that there's probably quite a few troops that are responsible for violence against women, whereas, you know, it maybe gets blamed on Iraqi men, but I don't think that's something that's too far-fetched.
Well, again, it's a wonderful opportunity for us tonight to be able to listen directly to Faiza Al-Haraji and Raed Jarar tonight at 7 p.m. at the Loudoun Nelson Center. This program is being sponsored by Media Watch.
And sliding scale donation.
You can find out more information at 423-6355, or you can go on our website at www.mediawatch.com. And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and live streaming on the web at www.freakradio.org.
That's right. So I'm going to, here we go. So here we go. I'm going to do a little reading. Let's see. I'd like to get a little background music going on. You know, it's kind of hard to be out of being in this country. That's not. There we go. This will work. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. This is from the blog. The Americans usually ask at the end of each meeting, what can we do to help the Iraqis? And I usually say, tell your friends and neighbors the truth of what is happening in Iraq. This is not a noble mission. Do not send your sons to war, but put pressure on your government to pull the armies out of Iraq and stop building the bases. Do not intervene or interfere with the future of Iraq. Leave Iraq for the Iraqis. The last time we had 2 days of joint activities in various neighborhoods inside San Francisco, we had many participants. One of them was Scott Ritter, the weapons inspector in Iraq during the embargo. He spoke to the audience about his rejection of the war since the beginning, that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction, that this American administration is practicing an incorrect policy in Iraq. They waged war for false reasons, and until now, they are justifying their staying in Iraq with false justifications. And when people asked him, what should they do? He got angry and answered harshly, don't be fools. You put this administration as a government. Don't say someone forged the election. Huh. Wow. You should open your eyes and change your lives. Change your lifestyle from relying on oil and its revenues that come from occupying other countries. Tell your government that you can live in austerity in your resources only. There is no need for wars and the stealing the revenues of others. I sat in amazement watching this angry, frank debate. He accused them, and they refused these accusations. I know the truth of America here during this month. People here are weak, submissive, their will taken from them. They want the change, but do not know how, or else they are yielding people who lost hope in their ability to cause change. The decision in this country is in the hands of the wealthy who own the money, the banks, and the giant companies. And of course, the media that controls the minds of simple people. Even the election system is controlled by money. The candidate needs millions of dollars for the election campaign, meaning who would care for a candidate of principles, humanity, justice, and peace? Who shall take care of him or finance his campaign? But that who is ready to market the ideas of the rich class, the class that loves wars and investments, will find someone to spend millions on its campaign, will tell people all the nice promises and glamorous slogans. They will elect him, and when he gets to the chair and sits in the position of decision making, he will carry out the instructions of the major companies that financed his campaign, not the poor Americans who elected him. And so, people would live in one realm, and the decision maker, having abandoned them, would live in another. This is the reality of things in America. And the Iraq war is the most evident example. There is a huge popular anger from before the war till now, but people's opinion is marginalized. No one sees that opinion in the newspaper or the media, not even given a hint about it in a petty way. It gets lost with the tide of the news, with different features about actors and athletes, then the commercials, the weather broadcast, the financial and ecological news. And the issue of Iraq gets lost in the jam of stories, commercials, and empty talk. I keep asking myself, when I see the Americans' sorrow and their inability to change decisions or influence its makers in this country, is this the democracy that Bush and Condoleezza Rice brag about? for which they destroyed Iraq in order to implement? The government is strong, rich, and opinionated about decision and opinion. The people are poor, weak, and no one cares about them. They walk out in demonstrations. They shout. Some of them are arrested and go to jail. Others make documentary films and talk about the government's policies. But in the end result, who cares? How many of the 350 million Americans will hear him? And where is the decision? The decision is in the hands of those who sit in the White House, the Pentagon, and the Congress. And they are as far off as can be from the ordinary citizen in his opinion. As far off as can be. I felt sorry for these people. This country is definitely living in a crisis, and the Iraq War is the issue that revealed everything as it truly is. Wow.
Wow. So that's the blog that is written by FISA predominantly. It's called FISA, it's called blogspot.com.
And it's
Family in Baghdad.
A family in Baghdad.
One word. Yeah. You can Google that and find her blog. It's extraordinary, and we are very blessed to have them come to our community tonight at 7 p.m. at Loudon Nelson Center. And there'll be a small donation at the door. We're just asking people because we need to cover the cost of the room. And can't wait to see him tonight. I think it's going to be a great show.
No one turned away for lack of funds.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an awesome experience for sure. It's really amazing to read what her thoughts are on Americans. You know, as an American, I do feel really weak and powerless. But the reality is we just need to use our ways of dealing with problems and do it. You know, it's kind of weird, micro and macro, but macro-wise with the government, we need to impeach Bush.
We need to unify, too. I think, you know, that we feel divided and cut off from one another, and that we really predominantly, I think, have similar ideas about wanting to stop the war, wanting to bring our troops home, and that unifies us around the ideas of also stopping a corrupt government, if indeed that's what's happening. And it seems like more every day we're finding out more and more information about how corrupt and fraudulent our administration is. And so it's time for us to stop sitting on our bums and do something about it. Really be more active, speak up more often, think of all the ways that we can unify around issues of impeachment, stopping the Diebold electronic voting machines. Those two things, I think, are extraordinarily important that we work on.
I think it's just time to start working on impeaching Bush and pulling the troops out.
Right.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And I think I really like the idea of giving monetary compensation to as many people as we can. I mean, we are a really wealthy country, and I think
we're a country in debt, actually. You know, we're trillions of dollars in debt. We think we're a wealthy country, but I don't really believe that we are such a wealthy country anymore. We're being purchased by foreign countries. China owns a lot of us. That's why the Dubai ports were being purchased. I mean, it's a kind of a shadow game going on, it seems like, right now, and that we're made passive and told to go shopping a lot because that's keeps our economy kind of limping along, but it's not a strong economy.
So can we not afford to give compensation?
Of course. Well, I mean, again, if we weren't spending money on Halliburton, wasting and losing billions of dollars in Iraq, yes, of course we could. If we prioritized our finances, that's could certainly be the case and should be a high priority, that we give compensation and allow them to rebuild themselves. That was a good point that Raed made about that, I thought.
I agree. So thank you for listening, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. All right.